Fausto, what are you doing?
Mark, what is Fausto doing?
I have no idea.
Greg, Mark, listen up. Jerry Falwell, the TV evangelist, is dead.
Yes.
And I'm doing a little ritual to guide him into the afterlife.
Oh, let me join you with that.
Me too.
But you know, you might be asking yourselves, like, why would we be so generous and pray for the spirit of a hateful, evil man like Jerry Falwell?
Why would we?
Because I want him to find the peace that he never had here on Earth in his afterlife, if he has one.
Or maybe a piece of ass.
Yeah, definitely.
The gay man that you always wanted to be, but felt you couldn't for one reason or another in the afterlife, Jerry Falwell.
Shanti.
And so may you not haunt us here on Earth. May you take your hatred and your intolerance with you and bury it in your coffin. The Feast of Fools is brought to you by generous support of listeners just like you, people.
Without your support, we really couldn't do the show. So please visit feastoffools.net, make a donation, buy a t-shirt, because without you,
we are nothing.
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 Nothing. I know nothing.
Not a zilch.
I know the object of my desire waits for me in a pool of fire. I feel it so close, yet not in my hands. Wish I could touch you, make you understand. I pray as my fever burns deeper and deeper, when will I learn? Nobody else gives me what I need. Only your power brings me to my knees. Feel my breath move over you as I push my body through to get away. We're meant to be. If you let your body slide, I can touch you deep inside to get away. Can taste sweet ecstasy.
Yes, it's a podcast that gives you that fresh, fruity, delicious taste without the bitter aftertaste, the Feast of Fools. On today's show, we're going to be talking to Pat Kane, actress and playwright, about her brand new musical play inspired by pulp novels of the 1950s, Pulp.
Miniature pop stars are taking over the world, so get the hell out of their way.
And more blowback from Brokeback. Will it ever end?
All this and more on the People's Choice Podcast Award-winning podcast, Feast of Fools. I'm Fausto Fernandes.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And I'm Greg Shapiro.
Stay tuned. This is the music of Matthew Duffy from the album Here I Come. The song is Sweet Ecstasy, available on our website, feastoffools.net.
If you let your body slide, I can touch you deep inside and get away. Can taste sweet ecstasy. I don't know why I try, but I do. Deep in my heart, it's just gotta be you. I know together
hesitate to speak ill of the dead.
Why? They're dead.
They're dead, but Jerry Falwell died at the age of 73 yesterday, and I just feel like saying, ding dong, the witch is dead.
Ding dong.
Ding dong.
But, at the same time, I always feel like trying to come up with something positive to say about the television televangelist. It's not redundant.
At least you can turn it off.
What?
The TV.
The TV, you can always turn it off.
I think Jerry Falwell...
He was a determined person.
He was determined. He certainly made us more aware of Teletubbies and and the plight for gays and lesbians, and really asked America, are you for or against these people?
Right. And it really made some people like wake up and say, let me think about this issue. And, I think personally a lot of people said, I'm for them.
And I think he also convinced a lot of people were on the fence
But do you think if he was getting any, he'd be nice to
like
you.
Well, I think he did get sex, some. Or?
There was a sexual scandal in the 80s at which he was asked for forgiveness from his.
Oh no, you're talking about Jimmy Swaggart.
Oh, it was Jimmy.
That's Swaggart. A whole.
See, I always
other,
get these people confused.
Jerry that's Fall, a whole other can of freaky.
But Jerry Fall was the one that saw the 70-foot Jesus, right? So he had to have a sense of humor because who sees a 70-foot tall?
I thought it
Jesus?
Was. He actually visually.
Sorry,
saw
I thought it was
one
Pat Robertson.
One?
Oh, it was Pat Robertson.
Okay, let's get our freaks straight.
Okay, so there's a.
You know what it is? It's the seven-headed beast. You cut one head off, and another one rears
so
its head.
So there's Pat Robertson. There's Jerry Falwell.
Jim Baker.
Swaggart, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Jimmy Swaggart.
And who else? And Oral Roberts.
Who's the Crystal
Oral
Cathedral
Roberts.
Guy?
I don't know.
That might be Oral Roberts. Oh, there's a guy with the
oh,
with the
Oral
white hair.
Oral Roberts. I always laugh. Why do you have a name like Oral? What's your brother's name? Anal? Come on.
So the Reverend, the Reverend Jerry Falwell.
Yeah, the most Reverend Jerry Falwell.
He collapsed. And it was like the scene from the Scopes Monkey Trial movie. He collapsed at his campus office and died Tuesday after a career which the televangelist used the power of TV to transform the religious right into a mighty force.
And to spread hate.
He was aged 73.
Wow.
Don't cry for
how much
me,
money do you
conservative
think he raised for his
Christians.
Church?
Anybody else? Evita. You know, somebody should write a musical about Jerry Falwell. And you
get
could have
busy.
Like a whole Teletubbies hallucinogenic sequence.
Or how about when he tried to sue Larry Flint for calling him a, what did he call him? A motherfucker or something, right?
Yeah, a shit eater.
A shit eater or something like that. I forget what it was. And then Larry Flint won.
Yes. He won.
Mm-hmm.
The people versus Larry Flint?
Yep, sorry.
And then it was a wonderful opportunity for heroin addicted actresses to
play themselves.
Play themselves and win Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Did she won an Oscar for that. Did she?
Courtney
she
Love?
Yeah, didn't she get nominated?
I think she might have gotten nominated. I'm pretty sure she did not win.
People were
like,
well.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
Is that before or after the Botox and the collagen injections?
Jesus. You know, and she's such a brilliant, intelligent woman.
Is she?
She really is.
Oh, boy, you're awfully generous.
Wow.
I kid you not. She, in writing, in paper, on paper, she's a really intelligent person.
Oh, yeah, she writes for the Huffington Post, doesn't she?
She writes for the Huffington Post.
I'm making that up, aren't I? Or did I actually hear
has.
That?
She writes for Salon.com, actually.
Salon.com?
But, you know, it's just, I'm just...
No, it's Slag.com, not
Slag.
What's Skank. Slag?
Skank.com.
Skankarilla.
No.
The 1980s marked the religious conservative movement's high water mark.
Yeah, because Crazy Reagan was running things and that's
and he was
his buddies.
That's how he got in, was from the religious right.
Well, it's sort of the Republicans were saying,
the
you know,
moral majority.
Are you kidding me? Kind of candidates, you know, I can't believe you picked this loser, and that's usually who wins the elections. But in the more recent years, Falwell had become a problematic figure for the GOP. His remarks a few days after September 11, 2001, essentially blaming feminists, gays, and liberals for bringing on the terrorist attacks drew a rebuke from the White House, and he later apologized.
Mm-hmm.
The big blue-eyed preacher, no, not me, Jerry Falwell, with a booming voice, started a fundamentalist church in an abandoned bottling plant in Lynchburg in 1956 with just 35 members. He built it into a religious empire that included 24,000-member Thomas Road Baptist Church, the old-time gospel hour carried on TV stations around the country, and a 9,600-student Liberty University, which is now bankrupt, which Falwell founded in 1971 as Lynchburg Baptist College. From his living room, he broadcast his message of salvation, of hatred and intolerance, and raised the donations that help his ministry to grow, just like the Feast of Fools podcast. But only
minus the hate.
Well,
minus
I think you know, we always have said we try to run this podcast as kind of a church.
Because it's like we don't have a bake sale, but we have a t-shirt sale.
And all
so
that
please
stuff.
Visit feastoffools.net, make a donation, buy a t-shirt, because you know what? We're out there, we're fighting these people.
Yeah, instead of trying to enslave you to some sort of backwards idea, we're trying to liberate you. Have you think for yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we always encourage people that disagree with us to go to our community forums and you know, say that being gay doesn't matter. It's not who I am.
It's only a small part of who I am. And
just like your blue eyes. But see, by having blue eyes or having long hair or being tall or skinny or fat, it's not going to put you in prison. It's not going to get you lynched in the Middle East. So whoever politicizes gay, it ain't us. We're just reacting to that.
Right.
You know? But I think it's a wonderful part of who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if you're not gay, I mean, if your friends are gay, or there's a little vagina, and there's a little gay man inside every single one of us. Mm-hmm. That's why I always ask people, what would your vagina say if it could speak, could mm-hmm. write its own monologue?
Mm-hmm. And it kind of is disheartening when people say, I don't have a vagina, because it's kind of like, to me in a way, it kind of says like, you don't have a soul.
Oh. It is true. Yeah. It's just like, you know, it's saying women ain't shit.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I actually saw that scribbled in graffiti into a sidewalk. Bitches ain't shit.
Oh, oh yeah. Where did we see that?
That's a hip hop song.
That's a hip hop song.
But we saw that somewhere. Where
was
that?
It was like carved into the concrete in front of the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Is that where it was? You showed me that. That was
and
funny.
I took, actually, a friend of mine, Jim Chompas, took a picture of it and framed it. Well, I just thought it was so interesting because when you actually have to spend the time and energy to mm-hmm. carve into concrete, bitches ain't shit. Well, of course, they are shit. Women are very important. Mm-hmm. And obviously, because you're taking the time to hate
it's the
on
irony.
Them.
Irony.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe that's what it is.
Well, it's like, you know, if someone like Jerry Falwell probably in his heart had attractions or a very flamboyant spirit, and unfortunately because of the time and the place that he lived in, he had to go through the trouble of speaking against, you know, Tinky Winky. A children's television program.
Well, he tried to get the headlines. He wanted people to pay attention to what he was having to say. He wanted people to line his pocketbook. Yeah.
Well, so. And so
his
Ding Dong
account,
is dead.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. She's dead now.
So. But didn't anybody else smell bacon? What? Bacon? Oh, wait, no, that's, oh, wait, that's Jerry Falwell in hell. I'm sorry.
Well, you were telling me you saw a comic strip where he's at the
cartoon.
Gate of heaven, and instead of like St. Peter at the gate, it's Tinky Winky with his purse saying,
yes.
No entry! Oh, again! Burn him! Again! Yay! So Jerry Falwell, good for you.
Good
you know,
riddance to
I think
bad
it's,
rubbish.
The thing is, I think his death and you know, I don't want to put Tammy Faye Messner in the same boat, but she does represent that sort of like intolerant culture.
Well,
it's
she came out
to
more.
An end.
Yeah. Well, she also kind of became more supportive of gays and
later
HIV
on,
activism.
Yes.
So,
and,
well,
and,
actually,
as these people grow old and die, I think there's not going to be anybody to take on the helm. You know,
there's always somebody.
For every 10 televangelists that die, only one takes their place.
Oh no, there's someone. They've groomed.
There's
somebody.
There's
someone
already
next.
There.
Absolutely.
And they're, you know, the rise of podcasts. I hate to disagree.
What they do
with
is
you,
they
guys,
die and they pull the other guy out of his ass, and then he becomes the new one.
I disagree with you. It's like, I think that the internet has had a profound impact in putting people together and raising and expanding consciousness. And so that's why so many people are asking me, why are podcasts so much more liberal, in quotations, than, you know, talk radio, like AM radio, for example? And I said, because people are just, in general, people have a big heart and are tolerant. And the podcasting represents the full diversity and spectrum of human experience. And because people...
Because if there's a fetish, if there's a funk, if there's something out there, if there's an interest, there's a podcast about it.
That's a little Pollyanna-ish for me. But
no, I mean, well...
Yeah, he's a little too...
Because,
yeah,
you know, frankly...
Well, I'm sorry,
a little
you
weary.
Know, I'm just responding to
there's
what is there.
There's somebody going to say, what did Jerry Falwell do? He said outrageous statements and got media attention for his church. And
created an entire culture of homophobes and people...
And he's done. He's done.
But there's, believe
and
me.
Liberty University is bankrupt. It's going to be closing its doors. They're going to turn it into a Hooters next week. You know, it's the shows aren't being broadcast as much. I mean, there is still a strong
700
force
club is still
for conservative
strong.
Culture in this country, but it ain't what it used to be.
We are hoping that it'll
well,
go away.
Well, it was in 1 year. A federal jury found the fake ad did not libel
what
him,
fake
but awarded.
Ad?
See, Falwell sued Husser for $45 million in 1984, yes. Charging that he was libeled by a liquor ad parody that quoted him as saying he lost his virginity to his mother in an outhouse.
That was it. A motherfucker in a shithouse.
Well, if she was good enough for his brother, she was good enough for him. Right?
Yeah, right?
Okay. So, largely because of the sex scandals involving Baker and fellow evangelist Jimmy Swaggart, donations to Falwell's ministry dropped from $135 million in 1986 to less than $100 million the following year and have continued
so
to drop.
So little money underneath $100 million
well, you have to understand that in order to do these kind of like evil things,
yes.
It requires a lot of money and a lot of political power. And as it continues to dwindle...
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it, the, it, you well, can hear the bell. The
when
he, bell.
When his church is getting under $1 million a year, then I'll right. be like,
you'll
happy.
Be celebrating. It's a little early.
Then I'll be celebrating. It's a little it's early. A little early. It's like, don't put your
them.
Guard down yet.
Yes.
Well, I'm not
there.
Saying their guard down. I'm saying there is, be encouraged.
There's hope.
You know, because these people die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about the Scopes monkey trial guy.
You know, it's like how you many know? People don't Sorry. Believe, you know, how many people, you know, the, you know, 100 years ago,
I
how many
know.
People thought that the earth was flat or, you know, so
people
things
still
do change.
Believe the sun is alive. Mm. The majority of Americans were polled in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And they, do you believe the sun to be alive?
Like
or
having
dead?
A spiritual force or something?
That just question was, do you believe the sun
I, you know
is
what?
Alive?
I think if somebody came up and was giving me... I think if somebody... but the other thing is, though, too, I personally, if somebody came up to me on the street and asked me that question, I would tell them, yes, I believe that the sun is alive. Because if you're out there asking me whether the sun is alive or whatever...
Well, it was a poll
whatever.
About scientific thought in American okay. culture. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Carl Sagan wrote about it in one of his books, The Demon-Haunted World, mm-hmm. where he talks about how people deep sometimes, you know, they might on the surface want to be scientific and be skeptical and open-minded and mm-hmm. at the same critical about, you know, sort of pseudoscience, religious ideas.
Right.
And at the same time, they believe that, you know, the earth is alive or the sun is alive. And it's just a planet, people.
Is Elvis mm-hmm. still alive?
Elvis is not alive, okay. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So,
but just he has checking. Lots of building.
But okay, so anyways, we're talking about fetishes. Mm-hmm. IML is around the corner.
I can't wait.
And I want to send out a message to the people who are listening to the show who are attending IML. Mm-hmm. I said, bring out your adult baby friends.
Mm-hmm.
Your infantilists. I want to see a fat old man in diapers in a crib at the Hilton next week in 2 weekends from now.
Does he have to be fat?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to see, because you see all sorts of fetishes. You see mm-hmm. people licking boots, people being spanked,
right.
people wearing vinyl, leather, but where are
what
the adult babies?
What if he's a
little
babies? Kitty? Like a what? Little like a little short fella that looks kind of babyish.
I want to see an old, I want to see...
What about like a big muscle guy in a diaper?
No, I want to see... Let's see. What is that? Sorrel Book.
Because you want something plump like a baby.
The yes. guy from Dukes of Hazzard in the diaper?
I want to see Sorrel Book.
Mm-hmm. Dude.
Yeah, I want to see him in a diaper, in a crib, going, ga, ga, goo, goo. And I want to see his nanny, like, being, now, be a good little baby. Otherwise, we're going to spank you. Because this is the thing that bothers me about IML, yeah. is I want to see more fetishes. It's yeah.
No, is it going to be, is it at the Palmer House again this
I'm not
year?
Sure. It's either at the Hilton or the Palmer.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Well, there's a Hyatt.
That's the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
the
Hyatt. Hyatt the... And then they've got some spillover hotels. But I want to see somebody that's filled with love.
Wow, what a nice thing to say.
Well, you know what that means, right?
No.
Oh. It's a nice way of saying
how
being
silly
fisted.
Me. Never
mind. Filled with love.
Well, I always thought
when they
do it at the Palmer House, mm-hmm. they should just rename it the Rosie Palmer House for the weekend.
Oh, Jesus.
Why? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. No,
and then they had like one of the rooms in the hotel mm-hmm. is the Red Lacquer Room. Mm-hmm. But last year, with all the spanking going on, it was like the Red Whacker Room.
Hey, I just want to put this out. I have a very good HD video camera. So if you guys want your little fetish party videotaped
Mark,
for
you
a
are
certain,
not
for
going
a certain,
to be doing
why not?
That.
I could make some money.
They're
make a
not
going
to pay you money. How are they going to pay you? They're going to write you a check while they're like
no,
fisting
give
each other?
Cash. We can set it up because like these things are so planned. These things are orchestrated. These are like sexual
months
symphonies.
In advance, yes.
They know what's happening. They know who's going to put what into who. So, you know, if you
it's
want
like a ballet.
If you want to document it, like, because think of it as like you're never going to get a wedding, right? You're probably not going to get married. And this will be like your wedding video. You can like
so
something
Mark is going
you
to videotape
cherish.
Your wedding.
It's a yes. family heirloom.
Fetish crazy.
Your fetish crazy.
Vinyl
something like,
leather. Latex wedding.
Whatever for your little private party.
Well, that's something Norman Rockwell forgot to pay me.
Well, it's a little slice of Americana.
I'll see. Are you guys going to go to the leather market that weekend?
Yeah, we're actually going to be there at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Mm-hmm. That's not this coming Saturday, a week
but
from this
from
Saturday.
From the Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial
when
Day
IML
weekend.
IML is actually happening.
So it's going to be Mark and me and Justin McPhee.
Justin's
going to
be
probably Greg Shapiro will be in a sling, so he'll be busy.
Mm-hmm. I'll be in New York, actually. But then,
oh, that's right. You're
and
going
by
for
New
the
York,
book,
you mean a
what
sling.
You, you're going to New York for the
Book Expo.
The Book Expo. Yes. And you're going to see who wins the Lambda Literary Awards.
I
is
am
that
indeed,
correct?
Yes.
And we have had how many people that are nominated for Lambda Literary Awards?
Three
of them.
Tim Miller.
Tim Miller for 1001 Beds.
Kate Bornstein.
Kate Bornstein for
Hello, Cruel
World. And then it's like 101 Things to Do Instead of Killing
you're
Yourself.
Missing, yes. And you're missing Hillary Carlip.
Wow.
I can only say one thing at a time.
Okay, one so thing at a time. That's right. So the, say, and so, say the
and
third
so,
thing.
And so the third thing is Hillary Carlip. And what's the name of her book? Smarty Pants.
Huh? Queen of the Oddballs.
That's right. And you can buy them all through our website, through our Amazon links. You can follow any of our Amazon links and buy anything from Amazon.
But see, I said right. When I interviewed Hillary Carlip, I said this is probably the best gay lesbian book of comedy anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's quite a statement.
And it's been, well, and then I've been validated by the Lambda Literary Awards because it's up for best work of humor.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely.
And in any category.
I think it's going to win.
I believe Hillary Carlip is going to win that category. I wonder if she's going to
win. Well, I'll let you know. Maybe I'll call in.
Will you call me and let me know if she won or lost? Because, you know, the whole chapter on Trashy Oprah is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was pretty funny. So, and of course, this is a woman who spent all her free time when she was an extra in the film Xanadu trying to pick up hot women.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So she was in
I think it was one particular woman or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, she
like
was
that,
trying to seduce
Olivia Newton-John?
No, Olivia was having her own little game. She was playing her own little thing.
Yeah, she was seducing and sleeping with a choreographer became her husband from that movie.
Is that right?
That is true.
Now, I think, though, Fausto, I think that there was somebody else involved in that, too, that it wasn't him. There was somebody else.
That's news to me.
Yeah, well, if you actually read her book, you'll know that.
Are you saying that I didn't read it?
Have you ever seen one?
No, yeah, I know you read it. It's just that I think, didn't we talk about that with Hillary? That she goes, no, it was somebody else. But
have you ever seen
know.
Sordid Lives, where Olivia plays a lesbian?
I did
see
that.
In the movie
Sordid
Lives, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
she doesn't
that's
have much of a role, though. She just kind of plays the guitar, right?
No, it'll work. It's a nice brief.
I liked it when she was on American Idol in the opening season, and they had the
American
freaks.
Idol.
And then she was like, there was like, suddenly the wind of emotion, you know, gotta believe we are magic. And she's just like sitting there just in pain. And I think that's the whole reason I watched the first 2 weeks of American Idol. It's just to see celebrities in pain.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, then there's your IML fetish there.
Yes, celebrities in pain.
Ooh, or no, people honey. Who watch American Idol to watch others suffer.
Mm-hmm.
You should put that on the internet.
Well, it's you suffer just by the smell.
Mm-hmm.
It's intense.
There's the leather has a lot of smell to it, yeah.
And there's, you know, anything that ends with ERS. There's cigars, there's leathers, there's diapers, poppers.
Poppers, yeah.
Poppers, yes.
Zippers,
yes.
Spankers.
You name it.
Wankers, chankers,
and
wankers.
Adult babies. I want the adult babies to show up. That is my favorite fetish. Not
I'm
that
sure
I
they'll
actually
have
participate.
There.
And I was looking online with Defecto, which is Jim Lucio.
Mm-hmm.
About looking for good pictures of adult babies, and I found one. They actually had a sort of like an IML for adult babies in San Francisco about a decade ago.
Aww.
And they had a guy, this big old guy in a baby stroller with his mom, and it was the funniest.
His real mom?
Well, his mommy in quotations.
Okay.
You know? And he was like sucking on a pacifier. It was the funniest thing you've ever seen. You know, a adult sized baby stroller. Funny stuff. Well, should we go to our guest? She's waiting.
Let's
on
go
the
to
line.
Our. Who is our guest today? What
today,
do we have?
Our guest is Pat Kane.
What does she do?
Playwright and actress. The woman who wrote the show Pulp, which is currently playing at Victory Gardens Theater. It's an About Face Theater production. And she not only wrote it, but she's also starring in this current production.
What's the show about?
The show is about. It's based on sort of the pulp novels of the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and sort of the lesbian subtext of the novels.
And it's a musical, too.
And it's a musical, too. How can you beat that?
Sounds like fun.
Good afternoon. This is Pat.
Hi, Pat. This is Fausto Furnos.
And Mark Fillion.
And Greg Shapiro.
Hey. Oh, my goodness. I have the triumvirate.
You're having a three-way.
A four-way.
A quartet of theatrical pleasures, my dear.
And you're on the Feast of Fools podcast.
Lovely.
How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
We're doing great. It's a beautiful day outside, so we're going to keep this short. Thanks for talking to us. Bye. Hey, so what'd you have for breakfast?
Obviously not what you guys have been having.
Just a little coffee, that's all.
Just a little coffee and whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeps does the body good.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you have for breakfast?
No, seriously?
Yeah. We want to know these things.
A little cereal, a little banana, a little coffee.
Wow.
Well, that's good. Right. The reason I'm always asking this, Pat, is because I never know what to eat for breakfast myself. And so every time I interview people, I'm like, what did you have for breakfast?
He's looking for a new breakfast meal because he's tired with the
I'm
one.
So sick and tired of breakfast cereal or eggs or oatmeal. I'm like, we need something new.
I vote for cinnamon raisin toast.
Sounds good. I love toast.
It's just so much sugar, you know? I want a plate of rice and beans and chicken and salad.
Well, why don't you have that?
You can do it.
So you're here to talk about pulp. It's not brand new, but it's a
brand new staging.
A brand new staging of it, right?
Right.
When was it staged the first time?
2004.
Oh, so not that long ago.
No, we did it. It was About Face Theater, who is the company that's doing it again. Mm-hmm. And we did it at Victory Gardens in 2004, which is where we also are now, but we're in a larger space this time around. Last time we were in the downstairs studio space. Now we're in the big upstairs space.
Moving on up.
Yeah.
And now, what would you say is the nature of your involvement with About Face?
I'm an artistic associate there. So I've been involved with About Face for probably about 10 years now.
Wow.
And for some of our listeners who don't know what about theater is, what is About Theater?
Face theater.
What is it about theater?
About Face.
Yes.
About Face mm-hmm. is the premier gay and lesbian theater, certainly in Chicago and hopefully in the country. We are a company that focuses a lot on new works with a gay, lesbian, bi, gender kind of thing, slant to them. And we were, like some of our prior work, we were one of the companies that helped produce and develop I Am My Own Wife, which
yes.
wonderful show.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It went on to HBO, right?
Or I something. Don't know if it's done that yet.
No. I thought they did. I thought they were going to do like a movie for cable.
That would not surprise me, but not to the best of my knowledge at this point.
Okay. See, I thought they did.
And you work with queer youth as part of their mission statement, isn't it?
Yeah, we have an About Face Youth Theater, and they do outreach shows, and they have a show that they put on every year, too, which is a fantastic program. I'm not personally involved with that, but the folks who run it are just amazing. They have amazing kids. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that Pulp is coming back to the Victory Gardens Theater in Chicago. Not mistaken, it was recently on tour, is that correct? The show went on tour?
Well, it wasn't on tour. It's been produced in several theaters across the country.
Wow, so whereabouts?
It's been in L.A., Boston, Atlanta, San Diego, out at Yale Cabaret, you know, so it's making the rounds. It's going to be in a couple of places next season. We have our fingers crossed for some other places. And so this company that's doing it right now, the group of actors have not been in those productions, but four out of the five original actors who created the roles in the 2004 About Face production are back for this production.
Wow.
And the fifth person, Jane Blass, who was absolutely magnificent in the first production, she has moved to New York. And so lucky enough for me, I've taken over that role, so I can
be
in the show now. So it's been an absolute blast.
So you get to star in the show that you wrote.
Well, the starring is straining it.
You can plump up the part a little bit.
As a writer who's performed, been in plays with my own roles, do you usually get criticized or like people say, oh, it's easy for you to remember these lines. You wrote them.
I was getting a lot of ribbing about that, yeah, during rehearsals, absolutely, yeah.
Well, and they're like, why did you put, you know, people get frustrated with the language or do they go, that was so clever, Pat?
Well, since it's worked out well, they usually tend to say, oh, that's so clever.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I'm glad that Fausto brought up the language part because one of the things about the show that's incredible is that the language really just rings true to the whole pulp novel mm-hmm. culture. It's like you fell into, it's like the audience feels that they fell into a pulp novel. There's great lines. There's the thing where Bing keeps saying over and over again, I'm a lesbian, plain and simple. Don't make no bones about it. I mean, it's got that sort of style of the language. Did it take a lot for you to sort of hook into that?
Surprisingly, no. I'm a huge old movie fan. And so when I started reading the novels to see what they were like, because I was first introduced to them by a compilation of the pulp novel covers called Strange Sisters. by Jays I Met, and it's all the beautiful covers and, you know, titillating covers and everything. And so I wanted to read what the novels were like, and a lot of them are really just wretched, quite frankly, but they all have a really wonderful, highly stylized, film noirish, planted kind of dialogue to them, which in the better novels sounded to me like those great movies of that same style from like the 30s, 40s, 50s. Mm-hmm. And I also have a big thing for Barbara Stanwyck. Fell into, you know, when I got really watching some of her old movies, you know, when I got outside of the Big Valley and actually watched some of her stuff, I realized really how terrific she was in this style. And so, so hence, there's a lot of Barbara Stanwyck.
Well,
so
there's a movie where Barbara Stanwyck plays a lesbian in it. And it was like
Walk on the Wild Side.
That's right. And it has a wonderful kitty cat opening credits.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because
slap girls and everything in that one, yeah.
So Pepper has that Barbara Stanwyck obsession in the show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She manages the bar where most of the action takes place in the show. And she has that Barbara Stanwyck obsession. Is that sort of a reflection of you?
Maybe.
Oh.
Well, a little bit. I mean, obsession's pushing it a little bit too far for me, but, you know, there's something about Barbara Stanwyck that I just truly love. And I also think the more I was kind of drawn towards her with regards to putting her persona in Pulp, the play, I realized how she's kind of a metaphor for the lesbian pulps, that she's this tough, scrappy, beautiful, kind of hard to categorize a little bit, underappreciated, really wonderful, sexy image, icon. And so I thought that was a really nice way to kind of tie both things that I love together.
So these are all a bunch of like tough-talking dames, as they would call in the old days. Now, Pat,
yeah.
I think maybe some of our listeners might be a little confused as to what your show is about, because I don't know if we've really covered that, and we'll need a nice little soundbite kind of to open the show. So just kind of be like, you know, Pulp is, and give us a good description of what the show is.
Sure. Pulp is a comedy with music that is an homage to lesbian pulp fiction of the 1950s. It's set in a club for people of a certain ilk in Chicago in 1956. And what happens is our hero, Terry Logan, who was a woman in the wax, she has a dalliance with the general's daughter, and so she hightails it out of the wax and makes her way up to Chicago and finds herself at the Well. And from then on, she finds herself in various love triangles and in the midst of this wonderful group of broads and femme fatales and drag kings, and comedy and titillation ensues from there.
Well, one of the characters that works in the Well, I previously mentioned Pepper and her Barbara Stanwyck obsession. Pepper is like the character, the actress that plays Pepper, Hannah Dworkin. There's a whole Nancy Walker thing going on there.
Was who's that Nancy Walker?
Nancy
Greg?
Walker played Rhoda's mother on Rhoda. Mm-hmm.
And she was also a wonderful, wonderful musical comedy.
Right,
actor.
From a long time ago, exactly. Yeah. And then, of course, lots of people know her from her Bounty commercials, paper towel commercials. Am I on the money there, or am I close to it?
I wasn't actually thinking of Nancy Walker. I actually wrote that particular part for Hannah. I knew Hannah, and I'd seen her do some very dramatic stuff, and she was friends with some buddies of mine, and so I thought, boy, she kind of, more in my mind, I had the Thelma Ritter kind of character.
Oh, sure, yes. Always the maid, right.
Yeah.
Who's Thelma Ritter?
Thelma Ritter was, she always kind of played the gum-chewing, wisecracking maids or, bar ladies who's talking
right.
One who was in all these movies in the 30s and 40s.
Right.
So she was fantastic. So I kind of had Hannah and Thelma Ritter in mind when I was writing it.
Great.
Yeah.
And there's even, like, there's a lot of humor in it. There's at one point, I think one of the characters even says, even lesbians need levity on occasion. And I really appreciated that there was, and I'm sure the lesbians did too, there's great humor in it. Was that also an important thing to include?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wanted to have it be as funny as possible, you know, and we old dykes, we get kind of stereotyped as not having great senses of humor sometimes, but I just thought that'd be fun to play
well,
with.
Well, you know, it's not like if you're a lesbian and you're a silver-haired fox, chances are you're going to be a little bit more with it than somebody who's a little, and you're creating art and culture and you're putting yourself out there. You're going to realize that you have to speak to all audiences, right?
I mean, yeah. Well, then that's been a kind of a fascinating thing with seeing the show in all these different venues, because I've gone around the country and seen some of the other productions, and it's amazing how the play kind of cuts across demographics, because the ladies, of course, love it, and gay guys really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and straight people from the suburbs really enjoy it, because, you know, I've heard the play described as being racy and titillating but not raunchy. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was trying to go for too. That's why I specifically said it in 1956, which is a time when the pulps were still rather reputable, and it was before they got incredibly sleazy and mm-hmm. pornographic. So, you know, it was very conscious on my part, and I wanted it to be able to reach a lot of different folks.
Pat, why do you think that the pulp novel and pulp genre and generally got so sleazy after time progressed?
No, I think it's hard for me to say. You know, it's because it happened, it really got really sleazy in the 60s, and you had that whole big sexual revolution that happened then.
Definitely.
So I think that it just, mm-hmm. what happened is that the pulps got as sleazy as they could possibly get without becoming pornography, and then pornography came into fruition. Mm-hmm. So once that happened, and once also feminist literature found its own niche, the pulps went away.
And it's amazing though how lesbians though have gone back to embrace that stuff, to the pulps. That's really fascinating. Is that for a long time it was probably like, oh, this is too much for, it's really meant for men, but yet the lesbians have gone back and embraced it and sort of rediscovered them.
Well, what I understand from the history is that, yeah, in a lot of ways, a lot of them were written for the target audience of straight men. But because it was such a closeted time, especially mm-hmm. in the 50s, it was really a lifeline to a lot of lesbians to be able to actually see something that was the slightest bit like their lives in print, because you just did not see that. Mm-hmm. So it was a real kind of affirmation to know that there are other people out there in the world feeling the same kind of things that I feel. Maybe I don't want my life to end up the way that they end up in the pulps, mm-hmm. but there's that was a very big affirmation. That was another reason why I was drawn to create a play about it. I wanted to kind of have an homage to that history, and I also wanted to be able to update it in the fact that if for the pulps of the time, mm-hmm. because Congress got involved with pornography and decency and all this kind of stuff, they made it be so that pulps always had to end in some bad way for the lesbians. Otherwise, it's not a morality tale.
Mm-hmm. No, so you don't want to get yourself into being a sex worker in Louisiana and being slapped around by Barbara Stanwyck, as funny as that may be.
Right, yes. Well, but, you know, even those, you know, everybody had to pay in some sort of way. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they go to jail, they're go insane, they die, they,
right.
you know, all this, and I didn't want that. You know, I'm not giving anything away to say I wanted all the characters to end up happy.
And Pat, a lot of things with back in the day with the pulp fiction, I was reading a little bit about Anne Bannon and her interview with Terry Gross, and she says you will not find the word lesbian in her thing, because everything had to be in code.
Yeah.
Do you incorporate this into your show? Do you speak in code, or are people upright? Are you calling yourselves lesbians on stage, or dykes, or whatever?
Well, there's one, the character of Terry Logan, the hero who kind of breezes into town, right? Mm-hmm. She's the one who is, like, first and foremost says, I'm a lesbian, plain and simple, I make no bones about it. Mm-hmm. Which several characters in the play say, well, that's refreshing, but also dangerous. So that Terry is part of what kicks up a lot of the dust that happens in the play is because Terry is so out there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
do you think that we as gay and lesbian people have the ability or the luxury of being able to laugh at ourselves in this point in history? And maybe that's why we're able to embrace works that seem kind of insulting or you know, backwards, back 50 years ago?
I think that there's, you know, to be able to look back in hindsight, it's reassuring to see how far we've come. So, you know, so for me, like putting this together, it was very important for me to, I didn't really want to make fun of the genre or the people of the time. I wanted to be able to enjoy it and have fun with the style and with the constraints of the time. But you know, I don't know, does that answer?
Because it's like camp, is it?
Absolutely.
It is like camp, but without any kind of a mean edge to it.
But see, I find it sort of interesting that a lot of women were rejecting these novels, you know, 50 years ago, and now today everybody's like, oh, this is so funny.
But
and,
were they, know, in fact, rejecting them 50 years ago?
That's why they weren't publishing them, so people stopped reading them, right? I mean...
Well, they became pornographic.
Yeah, they became pornographic, and also because the feminist movement came into being, so that there really wasn't.
But this pulp. At what point in time, pulp was like the lifeline to lesbian culture, and you could pick up a broad because you were in the bookstore, you're looking at these pulp fictions, she's looking at a book, you make eye contact, and the next thing you know, she's got the U-Haul, and U-Haul was invented, and there you go. Am I wrong, Pat?
I don't think you are.
Well, there was a line in the show about queer people being able to pick each other out in a crowd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially back then, everything was, like you said, Mark, there were codes, there were things, you know, names you called each other, that kind of stuff.
Well, so are people picking each other up in the lobby of your show?
I'm sure they are.
I want to
come and come
so
and
Pulp
see the
is going to be in Chicago at the Victory Gardens Theater. Yeah. How long does it run?
We just got extended until June 3rd. We run Wednesdays through Sundays, and so we hope everybody will come out and check us out.
How expensive are the tickets?
The tickets run from $20 to $40.
So that's pretty good.
Depends on what night of the week you come.
So can we like talk you down into lowering the price a little bit? Bring it down, 18. Well, it's a pulp fiction, you know. It's like how much do those books cost? Like 75 cents?
Well, now there were collectors. There were thousands
of dollars.
But back in the day, what were they? They were 50 cents or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't know exactly off the top of my head.
But this is pretty good because, you know, how much does it cost to go see Cyndi Lauper and the True Colors tour?
Oh, that's very expensive.
It's like about $200.
Yeah.
So this is.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you get lesbians in lingerie.
And music.
Seriously. Yeah.
So some of the women like really pretty and stuff? And
yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so you see, that's a selling point.
Yeah.
Pretty
We're
legs and great
show.
Big knockers.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And best of luck to you. Who do you play in the show?
I play a character by the name of Winnie, and she is the one in the show who hasn't quite come to terms with her own sexuality, but she does a mean drag king performance and loves to dress up as a man, but...
And she's a sharp shooter as well.
And a sharp shooter.
Annie Oakley.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, wasn't she fun?
Okay, people, there is a brand new trend that is happening across the country, especially that affects the entertainment industry.
What's that?
So you remember the band Minikiss?
Oh, Minikiss was the smaller sized version of Kiss with small people,
with
right?
Midgets.
Little people.
Yeah, and they were huge.
And they lip-synced, right?
They lip-synced. Well, actually, no, they did sometimes a little bit of a little bit of B.
Okay.
So when they could perform live... with a band, they would lip sync. I think it was more like karaoke.
Mm.
So Minikiss, which we tried to go see them, and there was a line right across the corner. Like it was about like
around the block.
It was like going to see the beginning. The Beatles or Star Wars. You know, it was a long line. I was like, I ain't getting in line for any midgets. Just kidding.
Little people, and that's the last time I'm going to tell you that. Okay.
Well, I've only said it once on the show.
I know, but they get mad, and they have that little people army.
Yes.
And they will come and get
you. The little Kiss army.
They'll hide under the stairs, and they're going to jump on that. That's as far as I'm going with that
joke.
Okay,
so anyways, the actress and comedian named Tara Joel, who measures 4'2" and is a former member of the tribute band Minikiss, has started her own band called Mini Britney Spears. And she's been touring the country, booking private shows and public venues.
And lap dances.
And lap dances.
Really?
Well, she's been recreating her...
Does she
pull
out a snake?
Look, check out this photo of her. Isn't that fabulous?
So, she's recreating her look.
And she looks just like Britney Spears. I look like Britney Spears.
Britney Spears.
So...
I want to see her with a snake. A snake would probably eat her.
So and she said, everyone told me I resemble her, and I thought, why not go with the hand given to you?
Why not?
She's a, you know, she's a little person, and she looks like Britney Spears, so why not combine the best things and start performing?
So she's mini Britney is what she bills herself as.
And so we're going to start seeing, you know, mini...
This is a hot new trend?
I think we're going to see mini Michael Jackson. We're going to see mini Gwen Stefani, mini Christina Aguilera. I just going to be a whole army. And so there, the, all the,
get your own
this is what
mini
I predict
Fausto?
In about a year from now, Mark, mm-hmm. is all the little people celebrities are going to get together and do a USA for Africa called Little USA for Little Africa. Isn't that a beautiful thought?
Are you taking like sleep aids or something at night? Or maybe you should take some sleep aids.
You don't do you think this is a far-fetched prediction?
It is. It's absolutely. It's causing.
Okay, we already have.
I'm having palpitations.
Of two bands.
I know.
So I predict that it's just going to be a trend of doing unusual
think, is there
people
a mini
imitating.
Share? That's what I want to see.
I want to see mini Madonna.
Mini Madonna.
I made it through the wilderness. But they, see, don't sing with high pitched voices. Like
no,
little
don't.
People have normal.
No,
voices.
It's not right. like the Munchkins. It isn't like the Munchkins doing.
We represent the Madonna. What is it? Like a virgin. Hey.
I don't know. I
think it'd be hysterically funny to see a mini version of Madonna in her Blonde Ambition cones.
See, the thing is, why aren't they just doing...
I think I've seen that. That's ringing a bell. Yeah, that rings a real big bell.
That's something from your dreams, and it has to get out of your dreams and into our lives.
But instead of doing these imitation shows, why aren't they just playing themselves and going out on tour
more press, cause nobody,
as a band?
Because people, they need a shtick, you know?
Little people are like bodybuilders or... You know, they are so in demand, and there's so few of them that are willing to put themselves on a stage mm-hmm. out there that they charge a lot of money. So they're not going to do it unless there's big bucks out there.
You know, they want to be paid.
You know? And there was actually a little person that auditioned for American Idol, and she, like, made it to, like, the final rounds, but she just couldn't sing.
Well, wasn't there someone in The Amazing Race as well? There was a little person
yeah,
who was
so,
and they have a Little People TV show now. It's like a family of little people. It's
it
on,
is?
Yeah, it's on one of the, I forget what station.
Called The Littles?
Something like Little People or something like that. I don't know. I see ads for it and stuff. It's like a reality TV program.
So you can visit Tara Joel's MySpace page, myspace.com/mini Britney Spears. Or you can see the link on our website, Feast of Fools.
Oh, I'm going to add her as a friend. I didn't know she was on MySpace.
Yes, she is so cute. Wow.
Well,
and she sings
too.
Well, too, see? She says,
he shows us a picture
how
of her.
How can you look
goes,
at a picture and know somebody
well.
Sings
like she
well?
Because she's holding a microphone.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's also in the news is that here in Chicago, there's a family that is suing the Chicago Public School District because for some unknown reason, God only knows why, their teacher decided to show like a 12-year-old girl in her class Brokeback Mountain.
It was a substitute teacher.
Was
though,
it?
Not the regular. I don't think it was the regular
classroom
teacher. That's
the laziest teaching you can do.
Well, she's like, today we're going to learn about the Wild West and anal sex. And it's just like, why would you show, like 12 years old, what grade is that? That's like 6th or 7th grade?
Well, everybody knows it's faked and Brokeback Mountain anyway, so
I know,
why not
why
show it to a 12-year-old?
But you know what? Why would unless that scene was cut out and stuff like that, why would you
well,
show that?
Well, it's an R-rated movie. An R-rated yes. movie just from the... I mean, it simply says...
Well, maybe she's French.
No one under 17 allowed to mm-hmm. see the movie, and that's an idea. Now, I could see if they showed Bareback Mountain that the kid would be really upset.
Well, they're suing for like
Mountain
half
just,
a million.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. So it's like, for, you know, this one family is because I think they're probably wanting it more for punitive. I don't know. But it's just
they show
ridiculous.
Them that
unless
unrestrained,
you know,
hot cowboy love.
Passion,
unless this
passion.
Is like, because I'm sure there's got to be a cut version or something like that for television, right? I'm sure. No,
not
or
yet. Not that
not
I would
see. I think this is a double standard
what?
Because, and they're really suing them because it's gay. Because on Law and Order, all the time, you know, it's like, or what is that one cop show that had all that, had that big fat
SUV.
Bald guy?
Oh, NYPD Blue.
NYPD Blue.
It's all the nudity.
Yeah, who was that guy? Who they
Dennis Franz.
Oh, I forget.
That right. was a nightmare. And that was full...
But they
know.
Had a gay character on that show, too. So that's kind of a nightmare.
That was Rick Schroeder,
what happened
right?
to him?
No, it was...
Like, he
I can
he
see
was
him,
pretty queenie.
Bill
Rick Schroeder.
Bill Bottrop?
Something like
that. Rick Schroeder.
What's he up to these days? He was on that show for a long time.
He was, a long time. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, the thing is, when you bring a movie into a classroom, it isn't like it would be like in the DVD library at the school. I mean, chances are, Brokeback Mountain wouldn't be in there. So this person is actually walking around with it, like in their backpack or something. I mean,
well, the teacher obviously brought it in from home or from wherever.
Make sense.
You know,
and what would the lesson of that movie be?
Be true to yourself.
Be true to yourself.
I mean,
you know.
I could see if maybe if you showed it like to a class of high school seniors, who are probably of age, who might have read the Annie Proulx novel in class, that would make sense. It's like, but in when you're 12 years old, you're not reading that novel or that novella and then seeing the movie.
I saw a Romeo and Juliet, and they showed when I was 12 years old in high school, and they showed his ass, and they actually
that was also high school though too.
Well, so what? I saw it when I was 12 years old. So it's okay to see 12
years old
teenagers
like,
having
like,
sex in a movie.
12 years old is like sixth grade. That's not high school.
But movies in the 60s, again, movies in the 60s didn't have the level of, you know, of nudity or sexual suggestiveness. I mean, what do you mean? And it was Shakespeare. It's Romeo and Juliet. It's Shakespeare.
And the thing,
if it's Shakespeare having,
and we saw that, we saw that too. And everyone was like, "Oh, so you see his butt, whatever."
Yeah, it's really, it's
no. I think they have sex in that movie.
I don't think the two are
they consummate
comparable.
The relationship. You
plus,
know?
I think even the language in Brokeback Mountain. I think there's probably a lot more use of contemporary R-rated language. There wasn't any of that kind of language in Romeo and Juliet.
I wish I could quit you is iambic pentameter. That's a pretty good one, right?
That's pretty good.
Thank you. You can use that
is
one.
It iambic pentameter?
No, I don't know.
It's pretty close, isn't it?
Wish I could quit you by the son of the light. Rise, fair Jack Twist, into my kisses.
It does seem like an odd thing to show to kids.
I think it'd be great. This is kind of an interesting thing that we're tapping into here. Combine Shakespeare with Brokeback Mountain and do like a Romeo and Juliet sort of thing. Brokeback Romeo and Julio.
Well, in your infinite amount of spare time, why didn't you write it?
I saw a cartoon when I was a kid, and it was about robots that fell in love, and they weren't allowed to be in love, and it was called Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, that's great.
That is so stupid. That's like almost as bad as Gilligan in Outer Space.
It was a one-time movie. It wasn't a series.
I was freaked out about my mother seeing Brokeback Mountain.
You were?
I was really worried. I mean, there were times.
Why? Afraid she was going to run off to Montana
and become
a sheep herder?
Well, if there's movies that I really admire, and if there's like a gay subject matter, I sort of feel protective of those movies.
You want to keep it to yourself.
Well, my mother. Yeah.
It's like people with the Feast of Fools podcast. They love us so much they want to keep it to themselves. But you can't, because otherwise we'll dry up.
Let those horses run free, people. Tell the world about the Feast of Fools podcast. And the best way to do it is just to go to your friend's computer and subscribe them when they're not looking. And then they go, "What is this hilarious, fabulous
show?" I just showed
up
on my computer.
I'm just enjoying it, but I don't know where it's coming from. You tell them, I took the liberty of subscribing you through the iTunes Music Store. It's just that good and that easy, people. And it'll cost you a penny. You don't even need a credit card.
That's true.
You don't need nothing except a big heart.
As gratis.
And an iPod and a computer. And an internet server.
And if you can afford all that, you can afford to support the show. Make a donation.
Right.
Visit feastoffools.net. Make a donation. Buy a t-shirt. We really do need your support.
So my mom is in the hospital this week in Austin, Texas. And if you want to comment on on my mommy, she definitely needs your light and prayers and support, because she's a very sweet old woman who's had hip surgery, and I'm very worried about her, and I hope that she gets better. So if you guys can say
give
something
her a little
nice,
love,
you know, do it on our website, feastoffools.net. She does read those. I call on the phone and I read them to her.
And then she cries.
And then she cries. When she saw
like
Brokeback Mountain, she was like, "Fausto, I love that movie."
Really?
She was. She thought it was a bit sentimental too, though.
Oh, she was like me.
You know. Usually your spouse has qualities of your parents. Did you know that?
Sure.
Do you find that Rick has qualities of your parents?
No, I don't.
Not at all?
I tried to go as far the other way as I could.
You know,
But see, the other thing is, though, too, is like, Fausto really loves his mom. So that's why.
Well, so I really love
he looks for somebody that's similar.
Nurture.
Or you hate your mother, so you went the opposite direction.
I don't hate her. I just dislike her intensely.
No, I'm just kidding.
So should we end the show with a little bit of Chris Garneau? I know you've been talking about Chris Garneau all week long.
What? I have not.
Oh, Jesus. It's like the third word that comes
can't
out
get
of your
enough
mouth.
Of Chris Garneau.
No, I know. And his dreamy little eyes.
I know.
What was we were talking about? Britney Spears.
Shut up.
But see, the problem if you're a short musician, it's going to be really hard to find somebody even smaller than you to replace you on tour.
Wouldn't it be great if Chris Garneau did like a remix disc too with all those beautiful songs with like a nice remix, a nice.
With a little techno.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Some beats.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
You know, well, I think this is what I suggest Chris Garneau do. Take a page off of Beck and hire a puppeteer to do marionettes of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that way it's like a little version of you without having to hire somebody full time.
That sounds good.
Wow.
Read off the list here. What do we got there from him? Which one are you playing?
This is Baby Romance from his album Music for Tourists.
Mm.
I don't quite understand the concept of the title, though. Because it's an airplane crashing.
It's not crashing, that's a cloud.
It's smoke coming out of its
tail. That's a cloud.
Have we not been through this already?
It looks like September 11 or something.
It's United 93.
It's like, look at that.
It says United 93 on there, doesn't it? No, I don't know.
I'm Fausto Furno.
I'm Mark Fillion.
I think I'm Greg Shapiro.
Yes, you are. You can't deny it.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Lift him to the parking lot. Your car is waiting there for you. Your car is waiting there for you. I would like to see a little more propriety. Cooperate with me and answer me without a plea. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you. The whiskey's waiting on the fire top. The babe is going to drink too. She's got no clue, she's at the shop. But if she knew, then she'd kill you.